It's syndicated radio talk show host, author, singer, Al Cole, welcoming you to another edition of People of Distinction, the talk that gives an in-depth view of some of the most dynamic, intelligent, and successful people on the planet. I come from a CBS radio background, and have helped pave the way to treating women, and guys too, with the dignity that they deserve with my new book, Romance for Women. Strap down, everybody. Today, my very, very special guest, an honored guest, is the distinguished, and I might add, the very compassionate Tippi Hedren. We all know Tippi Hedren as the actress who just lit up the screen in Alfred Hitchcock's classic movie, The Birds. She was riveting and, I would even say, elegant. Tippi went on to receive a Golden Globe Award for her performance in The Birds, numerous Best Actress and Life Achievement Awards, a Woman of Vision Award, and in 2003, Tippi received a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. Since 1983, a major part of Tippi's efforts has gone into the Shambhala Preserve and the Rohr Foundation. We're going to talk a lot about that, people. Currently, the Shambhala Preserve is home to over 80 exotic felines rescued from abusive situations. And, you know, we've all experienced abuse. We don't want animals to have to do that as well. They're brought to the facility to live out their lives peacefully, and I might underscore here, naturally. If you want to learn more about this marvelous organization, the Shambhala Preserve, just go to their website, www.shambhala.org. I'm going to spell that out for you. www, of course, dot shambhala.org. Tippi is not only an outstanding actress, she's a lover of life and a lover of dignity, and I like that. Tippi is an advocate for life and dignity because she has co-authored and passed the Captive Wildlife Safety Act and is active with an extraordinary bill currently before Congress, the Federal Ban on Breeding Exotic Cats for Personal Possession Act. I applaud Tippi's sensitivity as an actress, and even more, I would say, as a human being. In my opinion, exotic animals should not be housed for profit. They should be cared for and loved. Responsible supervision is not only a mark of compassion. I believe any other direction that a human being takes towards an exotic animal is, in fact, unconscionable. I believe that all animals are sacred, all living, breathing creatures should be honored under the protection of God's umbrella. So it is really my honor to welcome you, Tippi, to Cole & Noble, present People of Distinction.
Well, thank you. That was a lovely introduction. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Tippi, for all of the pleasure that you've given everybody with your acting over the years, and now the pleasure that you're giving animals with the wonderful things that you're doing with the Shambhala Preserve and also the Rohr Foundation. First thing I want to do is I want you to introduce yourself to my audience. Everybody knows you for your accomplishments, but what was it like for Tippi just growing up? Tell us some of the things that in your life before you became an actress that led up to the wonderful things that you later achieved in life.
Well, I was born in southern Minnesota and lived in a very small town called Lafayette. It's still small. It's
yeah.
Charming. It's wonderful. I love going back there. I was Grand Marshal of the Lafayette Parade.
Wow.
Oh, it was,
I love it.
It was fabulous. I absolutely loved it. It was on the 4th of July, so a number of years ago. But it was a very, very small town, and my sister and my parents and I lived there for my first 4 years.
Yeah.
And then we moved to Minneapolis, because it was during the Depression, and, you know, the big Depression, not the one we're in now.
Yeah.
But, those years ago in the 30s.
The real one, yeah.
And, yes. And so we went to Minneapolis because my father had found a job there. And I grew to love Minneapolis tremendously. We lived in Morningside, and I went to Morningside grade school and scared to death. I was such a frightened little girl. I was so shy.
Really?
Oh, it was just I just hide behind my mom's skirts, and I didn't want to talk to anybody. And I remember the first day that she took me to first grade, she took me into the schoolroom and sat me down and she said, we'll come and get you after school. Well, she walked out and didn't get a block away, and I was running down the street. Scared to death. Somehow I got over that.
Yeah.
But and it's a good thing to get over it. It's very painful.
It is, but I will say something here, if I can interject and then certainly go back into what you're saying. In your acting, I've loved it, of course The Birds, but also Marnie. I loved your performance in Marnie. And what I saw is not too dissimilar from what you're describing. I didn't see a shy person, a person who was a shrinking violet or anything. But I saw a very sensitive person. I saw sensitivity there. And I saw compassion. I saw an unassumingness that might be really natural with you. And what you're describing right now could be something that other people saw on the screen about you. Did it seem that at times you were just living out on the screen some of your beautiful nature there?
Well, I think your own life can be woven into many characters that you play.
Mm-hmm.
Marnie was one of the most interesting characters I think that any actress could ever want to do. I mean, she was really so complicated that it was intriguing playing her. And maybe some of that wore off. That's very possible.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Yeah. And it's there is something beautiful to be said about growing up in a small community. I did too, on the East Coast.
Uh-huh.
And there's a sense of security with that. I always found it because not only do you know people, but everybody seems to care about you. Now, the negative thing for a kid is when you grow up in a small area, kind of like when you're a kid, everybody knows your business. And if you do something wrong, you've got a million parents out there to tell you that you did. But that's also a source of caring and protection, isn't it?
Of course it is.
Yeah.
Of course it is. You know what happened in my high school time? I went to Morningside Grade School, Edina, for the junior high, and West High School for, for the last 4 years. And my father became very ill, and we moved to California. And I was just brokenhearted.
Mm-hmm.
It was in my junior year of high school.
Oh.
And, it had to be, but, oh, how I suffered. It was just absolutely awful because I had such a wonderful group of friends, and we are still friends today, and we see each other often. But it was such a close-knit group.
Yeah.
And it was tragic. I often, say to parents, if you don't have to move your kids while they're in school, it's so valuable to them.
I agree.
You moved.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's necessary and has to be, but it's so hard on the kids.
It really is. And, thank God I never had to go through that. I just lived in that same area up until I, graduated high school and then I went off to college. So I had that that real sense of security and well-being. It was really nice.
Yeah.
We're talking to wonderful woman here. Colin Noble present people of distinction. Tippi Hedren, who is best known for her acting in Alfred Hitchcock's The Birds, also Marnie, that I believe came a year later. Marvelous actor. She's also heavily involved in protecting wildlife, specifically exotic animals, the Shambhala Preserve. You can go to www.shambhala.org. Clarify something else here. We're going to move on to what everybody is waiting for here. My listeners are on the edge of their seats to find out what it was like to act in The Birds. Not only just acting in it, but what led up to that? When did you first find out that there was something pending called The Birds. What was it like, your experience with The Birds?
Well, it was sort of almost like a fairy tale. I had been a model in New York, and I was under the auspices of the wonderful Eileen Ford agency, and for 11 years. And, you know, that was during the 50s, and I remember during that time, television was really taking hold of the world, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody was staying home watching The Little Black Box. Well, along with that came commercials, which ended up being a very, very financially lucrative phase of the model industry. And so, in the, you know, from 55 on, I was doing a tremendous number of commercials, and it allowed me to do all kinds of wonderful things. I went around, I took 6 months off and went around the world,
mm-hmm.
and literally, I started in New York and ended up in New York. I just kept going going east.
Wow.
And there was a commercial that I had done in 1961, and that same year I moved to California, back to California, because my daughter was getting to an age, you know, Melanie was getting to an age where she just needed some kind of independence, like simply saying, "Mommy, I'm going out to play."
That's right.
Which you can't do on the streets of New York. So
mm-hmm.
I wanted her to have those kind of, that kind of a life. And I was in L.A. for about a month and a half, and I received a call from an executive at Universal asking if I was the woman in the pet milk product, the Seco. It was a diet drink.
Oh, really?
And, yeah, and I think I weighed all the 100 pounds when I did that commercial. and I said, well, yes. And he said, well, there's a producer-director who is interested in you. And I said, oh, really? Who? And he wouldn't tell me. He said, would you come over and meet with me? Which I did. And he asked if I would leave my photographs, and I had a reel of commercials, and if I would leave that with them over the weekend. This was on a Friday the 13th.
Oh, God, really?
Yeah, of 1961. And so I did that. I left the ingredients. Now, you have to understand, that's on a Friday afternoon, and all weekend long I'm wondering, who is this person?
Oh, you still didn't know?
No, they didn't tell me.
Whoa.
And I had to go back on Monday morning, and I asked again every executive that I met, who is it? You know, it became almost a game, and nobody would tell me. On Tuesday morning, I was asked to go to meet with an agent at MCA, and he said, well, Tippy, Alfred Hitchcock wants to sign you to a contract.
Whoa.
If you're interested in the terms, if you agree with the terms, we'll go over and meet him.
Isn't that something?
And that's how it happened. I signed the contract and went over to meet him. And then, you know, it was very interesting. He opened the door of his office and stood with his hands in front of him, looking very pleased with himself.
Yep.
And, we talked about travel, of which I had done extensively. We talked about foods, wine, everything but acting.
Really?
Or movies, yeah. But he did bring in the beautiful, wonderful, talented Edith Head, and which was very exciting for me, of course.
Explain to my audience who, and to me, I've heard the name, but who is Edith Head again?
Oh, Edith Head was one of the most prominent costume designers for
films. Okay, right.
And she had something like 9 Oscars, which she called her children.
Wow.
She didn't have children, but she'd had all those beautiful Oscars lined up in her home. It was just lovely, and she was an interesting woman. I learned a lot from her, so much from her. One of the best things she taught me was how she could manipulate any director or producer to come around to her way of thinking, but thinking it was their idea.
Yeah, well, obviously she never worked with Michael Landon. Michael was impossible to manipulate, I think.
she became a very, very dear friend, and I loved her very, very much.
Yeah.
And, of course, during those first weeks of being under contract, I learned that they were doing a movie called The Birds. But he was also very, very much involved with his weekly television show.
Right.
And right. I just assumed that I would do some of the television shows. And but first, we did a screen test. And Al, it was awesome. 3 days, the entire Hitchcock crew, from the DP, Robert Burks, down mm-hmm. to the prop men, his entire crew was on this shoot
wow.
for 3 days. And we did scenes from Rebecca, Notorious,
oh.
and Catch a Thief, and three entirely different women. Martin Balsam was flown in from New York to be my leading man. Now, he had just done Psycho with Hitch.
Mm-hmm.
It was absolutely amazing to do this. And then we did costume shots of the gowns, all the clothes that Edith Head had designed for me. And it was just an amazing time.
Wow.
And about 3 weeks later, I was invited to Chasen's restaurant. You know that? Did you ever go to Chasen's?
I've heard of it.
It was one of the biggest, most popular restaurants for all the stars.
Yeah.
All the big stars.
Yeah.
And we sat at Hitchcock's table, and Lou Wasserman, who was then, I think, CEO of Universal, came and sat with us, and Hitch placed a very beautifully wrapped package from Gump's in San Francisco, that beautiful gift shop. And I opened it, and it was a pin of seed pearls and gold of three birds in flight.
Wow.
And he said, "We want you to play Melody Daniels in The Birds." Now, this had never occurred to me that I would even be considered for a major role, having never done a film before.
And that is amazing.
Stunned. I was absolutely stunned. And I looked at Mrs. Hitchcock, and you know, my eyes were watering, and I looked over, and her eyes were watering. I looked over at Lou Wasserman, one tear, very parsimonious with the tears, and it was just a stunning, stunning moment.
That really is. And
yeah, and then, of course, the work began, because commercials give you a great technical background,
mm-hmm.
but it's not like taking on a character.
No, not at all. And when you took on that character without any acting experience in front of a camera in the way that now you were doing it,
right.
Were you frightened?
No.
No.
No, I wasn't. And you know why? Because Alfred Hitchcock gave me the confidence that I could do it.
Isn't that marvelous?
And I swear, if he hadn't done that, I never would have been able to do it.
Isn't that
but
great?
He was not only my director, he was my drama coach. And
that's, wow, what a drama coach, first time out of the shoot.
That. It was amazing.
Isn't that something? And in your performance, I personally, and I'm sure this is dittoed by everybody saw the movie, we shared your fright. We shared your tears at times, and, you know, having those birds coming down, and it was just ominous, and it was relentless. And it was just, it's not even that you had to do a lot of acting, it was emoting. And it was emoting in such a wonderful way. It came out of your look as much as anything else. It was really something. You probably, with Alfred Hitchcock as your acting coach here, you probably felt pretty natural in the movements, I would think, just from watching it, didn't you?
I did.
Yeah.
And I must say that Rod Taylor and Jessica Tandy and Suzanne Fichette made me feel very confident.
Yeah.
As well, and that's a very, that those are very big people.
I love them.
In my eyes.
I love them. Suzanne Plachette. Rod, you know, Rod did an exceptional acting performance, too. It was, I love the word unassuming, when I can use it properly, and that was a proper way to use it. He wasn't overbearing. He was protective. He was loving. And you and he made a great couple. I loved it.
that worked with John Connery, too.
That's right. Yeah, and Marnie. Yeah. That was another wonderful couple.
I have to tell you a story about Jessica Tandy, if I may.
Sure.
We were doing that scene where after she had just seen the farmer with his eyes pecked out, and she races that truck, and she...
Yeah.
She ends up in bed, and I bring her some tea. And Mr. Hitchcock said, "I want you to play this in a very bitchy manner." I said, "Okay, that's fun, you know." And okay, so that's the way I did it, and it was assembled. Jessica and Hitch watched it together. I don't know why I wasn't there that day, but because I sat in on meetings and everything as part of my education. But anyway, I wasn't there that day. And when the scene was over, Jessica turned and said, "Hitch, nobody's going to like that girl. Now, in the meantime," because I was, you know, being very bitchy about it, about the whole scene. And so meanwhile, we had gone on to other things. That set was long put away, and, you know, and Hitch brought the set back, had us do the whole scene over, and you take this, exactly the same scene, not written, and no words were changed, the same actors, the same set, and I did it in a more compassionate way.
Yeah.
And that's the first time that I really understood how different you can play a character.
Wow.
I mean, it was really an eye.
I understand that, Tippi. I'm not an actor, but, you know, in some ways I can say I've never acted a day in my life, except for every day of my life.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you get it. Because, you know, life is that sort of thing. But particularly the, you know, the things that I've done, not only with radio, but I'm a singer, musician, and a writer. And there's a lot of acting that goes into this in a positive way, figuring out the character that you're playing at any particular time, putting things in the right setting and the right words, and getting out that you know, that right image of what you want to do. And there are many ways. I agree. There are many ways to play the part. And you hit something in the way that you play. You know what? I'm going to say something else. This is kind of like a precursor to what we're going to get into with the Rohr Foundation, the Shambhala Preserve, and everything. There is a way of hitting the mark. Internally first, you hit it first with compassion, with love, something that approaches a spiritual understanding of what you're doing. And when you hit that, then everything after that comes out right, because you have hit the basic tone of what you want to do. And that works out in acting. It works out in music, too. When you write a song, sometimes the first few notes tell the whole story. After that, the song is just written for you. And the acting, you hit it. You hit it with that acting. You found your image. You found your niche that way. And there are so many ways to do it, but you hit it just the right way. And that is so satisfying when you do that, isn't it?
Absolutely, it is.
Yeah. I love that. We're talking to the wonderful Tippi Hedren here on Cohen Noble Present People of Distinction. We just ran down just a marvelous overview of what she experienced with the birds. She met Alfred Hitchcock, didn't even know that, for the first weekend that she was told that there was something marvelous that was going to happen. She didn't know what director wanted her for what. And then she found out it was Alfred Hitchcock. She was guided through everything, her first quote-unquote acting experience, even though she came from a commercial background doing a lot of commercials. And we just heard from Tippi herself what it was like to portray that wonderful character that we all love, and she hit the mark with that. Another thing, folks, that she's hitting the mark with, and we're going to spend a lot of time on this, is exotic animals. And it really captured your heart. Was that the inception of the Rohr Foundation?
started very early. This was in 1969 and 70 when I did two films in Africa. And,
way back.
Yes, and environmentalists were talking about the fact and making people of the world aware of the fact that if we didn't stop, we didn't stop the encroachment of the wild animals' territories and the sport hunting and poaching of the wild animals, by the year 2000, they would be gone. And there was a lot of awareness going out. And my then husband was a producer.
Mm-hmm.
And so we decided to do a movie, and we were kicking around ideas. Should we focus on a species, one particular animal? What should we do? And that question was answered very quickly when we went on a photographic safari in Mozambique. And there was a house that had been abandoned by a game warden because it flooded during the rainy seasons. And he moved out, and it grew to be the largest pride of lions in Mozambique ever, I guess, in all of Africa. Started living in the house that the game warden had abandoned. And there were, just picture this. It was a sort of a bamboo type home, and the lions were sitting in the windows. They almost looked like portraits. They were going in and out the doors. They were napping on the verandas. The cubs were playing out in front. It was absolutely scenic and beautiful.
Wow.
We thought, bingo, that's perfect. Perfect movie set. And dealing with animals, of which most people are either enchanted with, think are beautiful, they're scared to death of them, which is smart. And, so we thought, this is what we'll do. We got back to the coast, the script was written, and using sometimes, there must have been 25 to 30 lions of all sizes living in that house, and that's the way the script was written. And
isn't that something?
We planned on using Hollywood acting animals, and that didn't work because every one of the trainers said, you can't do this movie because of instinctual dictates to fight. I don't want my cat hurt. I don't want to get hurt.
Mm-hmm.
But your own animals, introduce them carefully. So from the very beginning, we were accepting animals who were in need of sanctuary. And we were a sanctuary long before it was even thought about, actually.
Isn't that amazing?
However, as the years went by, our nine-month shoot took 5 years. And during that time, we learned so much about these animals and learned how to take care of them. And by the time the movie took so long because all of us were hurt by these animals. I was hurt. My daughter was hurt. My then husband.
Yeah.
My two stepsons, Jan de Bont, DP was hurt. Our assistant director was hurt. It was a nightmare. It was beautiful. It was exciting. It was frightening. That whole time was just one amazing day after the other. And after the movie was finished, and we sold it all over the world, and by 1983, all of those monies were gone. So I founded the Rohr Foundation in order to keep the animals here. And the woman who helped me put the foundation together said, I have a gift for you. And she said, it's a word, a Sanskrit word, a meeting place of peace and harmony for all beings, animals and humans.
That's
really how it all started. And all those years, I kept thinking, why aren't there laws prohibiting these animals from being born in the United States to be sold as pets? They're apex predators. They're top of the food chain. They're one of the most dangerous, one of the eight of the most dangerous animals in the world.
Mm-hmm.
What makes a pet out of that?
Well, exactly. They are... it's a tremendous amount of respect that one gets for the... for the fierceness and, for the power of these animals.
Oh, it is.
And they, they definitely should not just be housed as regular pets. Another aspect is with ferocity and also with power. comes a sense of compassion. And when we experience something that is so powerful, we say to ourselves, wow, this power, to some extent, I can learn from. This power, to some extent, I can befriend. I don't have to be afraid of this power. If that power is treated right, if that power is treated in a natural sort of way, and in the Shambhala preserve, you treat these animals right, and therefore a human being can befriend these animals in more of their natural habitat. Now, I'm not saying in the same pet way that you would befriend small cat, but you can learn from the power of these animals as well, can't you?
Absolutely, you can. And I have to tell you, I love these animals more than my next breath. But I will also tell you, they are not pets and should never be in captivity. Never. I'm working very hard on a bill.
That's right. Now.
I was successful in getting the Captive Wildlife Safety Act passed in 2003.
Mm-hmm.
My own congressman introduced the bill for me, and it stops the interstate traffic of these animals and as pets. And it took 2 years before it was enforced, and but it passed unanimously in the House and Senate. And you know what I did when I testified for the bill?
What was that?
I thanked my congressman for introducing the bill. I thanked the committee for inviting me to speak. And then I looked at one of them on the committee, and I said, a 4.5-year-old boy had his arm ripped off by his uncle's pet tiger in Texas.
Oh, my God.
They were able to retrieve the arm, and due to modern medicine, they were able to reattach it. But he can't use it.
He
will go through his life maimed. A little 11-year-old girl went into a tiger's den with her stepfather to groom the tiger.
Hmm.
He closed the gate. The tiger jumped the little girl and killed her.
Oh.
17-year-old Haley in Kansas went with a group of friends to a photographer who had a tiger that he would take pictures with. And they all went up and had their photograph taken. She went up. The tiger stepped on her foot. She screamed. And the tiger jumped and killed her.
Oh, God.
I mean, this is just, you know, I listed about 18 different accidents of maulings and killings of these animals. And the bill passed. The Captive Wildlife Safety Act passed unanimously in the House and Senate. And President Bush signed it on December 19th of 2003.
It took
2 years for it to become enforced.
Okay.
And about 6 or 7 months ago, I did some research on the efficacy of the bill, and Al, it's working.
That's the thing.
Every one of the sanctuaries that I contacted said that there is a marked decline in the numbers of animals that need a home, of big cats that need a home.
That bill has actually saved lives.
Yes.
On both sides, human lives and animal lives.
Absolutely it is.
That is wonderful.
Yeah, so I'm hoping that the federal ban on the breeding will even be introduced. You know what's stopping it?
What is that?
The circus.
Oh, yeah, I can understand.
The circus, they have so much money. And they have a PR department that will tell everybody how happy those animals are, those lions and tigers and elephants, and that's a lie. It's a total lie. And if you could see the way those animals are treated by the training they have to do those ridiculous tricks and stunts that it makes you cry. It just makes you sick. And they start with the little young elephants, and they spread out they tie their legs together and spread them out so the animal is on its belly, and just beat that animal. I've had to leave theaters in which I've seen the footage. I'm just so upset and so just destroyed inside that anybody could even do these things to these animals.
That's terrible.
It just shouldn't go to the circus. I think it's the only way it's going to stop.
Well, yeah. Consumerism. You know, you have to stop buying into this stuff, people. I'm talking to the audience right now.
And you know, with the elephants and what they try to do is just destroy their spirit. But eventually, the animal will go crazy, and he will retaliate. He or she.
Mm-hmm.
And you hear about it all the time, where an elephant will, and they call them going berserk. They call them crazy animals. Those circus people are the ones who have done it to them. Same with the lions and tigers when they jump somebody.
You know, it's kind of like ancient Rome, bred in circuses.
Absolutely.
Yeah, the sensationalism here.
And this translates over into the sea worlds as well.
Mm-hmm.
Where you're putting a magnificent creature and it would be like putting us in a bathtub and saying, okay, that's where you're going to live for the rest of your life, dude.
Absolutely.
It's awful. It's just awful. We as humans have perpetrated against the animals on our planet.
You're so right, Tippi. And, you know, another aspect of this, it's awful for the animals. Obviously, the way that you're running down here is very descriptive. It's also awful for the human mind, the human mentality here, and the human spirit, the human sensitivities. When, you know, you're in the circus, and you're watching some of the hideous things here, and you're enjoying it, you are becoming desensitized, people. I'm talking to the audience right now. And in that desensitization, what you're doing is you're carrying it into your everyday life. You're going to carry it into your family. You're going to carry it into the other things that you do. And you're going to start treating maybe some of your loved ones as if they were just a piece of meat or something like that. We have to get over some of this stuff.
Oh, I totally agree. And I just so hope that people will really see through the propaganda that the circus will give you.
Yeah.
I hope that they will be able to see through it, because, and if any one of them goes over to the PR department and say, I'd like to watch the training methods of these animals, see what they say. See how they wiggle out of that one.
Tippi, you know, I'm going to add to that, too. I'm going to add to it in a way that, you know, I'm going to bring in another aspect of this, vegetarianism. I'm not preaching here, folks. I'm not telling you what to eat. I'm not telling you how to think. But we're pointing out certain things. Tippi is pointing out something that's valid here in the human mentality. We don't want to desensitize ourselves that way. Now, there are some people out there who are aware, not just that, you know, sometimes meat can be bad for you, but the way that animals are treated.
Absolutely.
And, you know, they're slaughtered, and they're not just slaughtered, but they're mistreated before they're slaughtered. A lot of cows, pigs, etc. And there are people on this planet that refuse to eat meat because they don't want to see the slaughter of these animals. And in the same way, you know, if you're going to sensitize yourself that way, people, and that's a right way to sensitize yourself, because you want the dignity of animals to maintain itself in this world, then sensitize yourself against the circus as well, because they are mistreating animals too. Am I on the right path here?
Oh, yes, you are. Absolutely.
We've got to talk here.
It's education. I remember seeing a television show where they were asking children questions, and they asked this little boy, what is meat made out of? Where does meat come from? And he said, hamburger. Didn't even say,
even
know that it was a live animal.
Isn't that something? I mean, we're brought up with that stuff.
Yeah.
And it has to change. We've got to get into some sort of reality here for compassion for humans and compassion for animals as well. All creatures, living, breathing creatures here on Earth. We're talking to Tippi Hedren, who has so much to say about a lot of things, folks. Acting and also humanitarianism and treating animals right, too. Exotic animals, you know, how would you feel? Again, I'm just talking to my audience, as I'm known to do. If you were on another planet, you're a human being, and you're mistreated on this other planet because this other planet just don't understand what human beings are all about. You want to do your best, But because you're mistreated, boy, you're going to start to react negatively. You're going to lash out, you're going to do this, and you're going to do that. You're a human being, and you deserve your dignity, people. As a human being, you deserve to be treated right in your own habitat. That is precisely what Tippi is accomplishing with the Shambhala Preserve.
Our main motive is here is to give them some semblance of a life that is respectful to them and what they need, which is not to be in captivity at all. Our animals are in large areas, many of them over an acre, and we have the capabilities of moving them from one area to another through moving fences, and corridors, and so that we can move them safely for them and for us. And we serve the best food to them. We make sure that they have enrichment.
Yep.
And you know, when they're moved, they have a different body of water to play in, different tree to climb, different neighbor. You don't see pacing animals at the Shambhala Preserve. It's really, we got the funniest compliment from one of our events.
Oh.
She came out to see Boo, who is a leopard, who was purchased in Texas for $6,000, and brought to Newport Beach, and ended up living in a closet because he was hurting. He was scratching her satin sofas and chewing her Jimmy Choo shoes, and she put him in a closet, and he'd take the cat out and wrestle with him, thereby thinking this is what, letting that cat know this is what you do with humans. And anyway, he came to live here. He was the most dangerous animal we had.
Yeah.
And she came to see him about a month and a half ago. And she said, you know, Tippi, what's wrong with you and your staff? And we all kind of went, what? Because we run such a tight ship, and the animals are the important thing here.
Yeah.
And she said, you take such good care of these animals. They live too long.
What a great compliment, actually.
I know. But, you know, we have a liger who came from Ohio. Illinois. And he's in his 20th year right now.
20, wow.
And one of our leopards, our black leopard, died when she was 23. And, you know, it's, and they're happy.
Happy. Well, happy means
happy
a lot.
Momentary, you know, feeling, but... they're content here.
Yes, I like that. And you live there. You live on the Shambhala Preserve.
I do.
Tell
right,
us.
Right now, Patrick is right outside my bedroom window.
He isn't. Well, I wish this were TV.
Yes, it would be. We should Skype this.
Tell us about your experience just living, you know, with the animals on the Shambhala Preserve. That must be so fulfilling.
It's absolutely wonderful.
Yeah.
I love watching them. I love listening to them. I am frightened when they get into arguments with each other. But at the same time, I look out at them and I say, I'm so grateful that we can give them the life that they have, but I'm so sad that they even have to be here.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm hoping that when the bill passes, the federal ban on the breeding of the exotic feline passes, you know, it's still going to be 20 years because that's the life expectancy of these animals in captivity.
Mm-hmm.
All of them... In every place has the capabilities that we do, but if they didn't have to be in the United States.
Yeah, it's not the right place.
What I'm really trying to do is put us out of quote business.
Yeah, I get it. Yeah, it's like law enforcement. If you're doing your job and you're correcting people properly, yeah, you're going to be out of a job. But that's a good thing because you're helping people.
And it costs so much. I have to raise $75,000 every month.
Wow.
The animals here.
That is a tremendous amount.
It's all private donation, including my own. And I've never accepted any monies. When we did our movie, I kept putting my my share back into the film. I've never been paid as president or director. About 15 years ago, I donated all of the land to the Rohr Foundation so the animals will always be safe. But I'm struggling right now trying to raise this money.
Yeah, you got to help Tippi out. And it's not just Tippi. Tippi is the person who coordinates, the major coordinator of all of this stuff. And she's the, the guiding force behind...
I'm the den mother.
She's the den mother. But within that den, there are a lot of other people, creatures, who need your support, folks. Now, if my audience wants to contribute here, how would they go about doing that, Tippi?
Well, the best thing is to look on the website, and donations can come from with your credit card or direct mail or... Oh, it would help so much.
It certainly would.
When I go to Washington, it comes out of my own money.
So wow.
I will never, ever take money from those animals.
Mm-hmm.
Ever.
Now, one other aspect here that a lot of my audience are pet owners. And, of course, we're talking about the usual pets, little dog, little cat. They have such a wonderful relationship to their pets
mm-hmm.
that they not only love their pets, they learn from their pets, and their pets are no longer just animals. Their pets are a part of the family.
Absolutely.
And they can even, to some extent, feel the consciousness of, you know, what it's like to be a dog, what it's like to be a cat, and they can communicate, and that's a big word here. They can communicate in such positive ways to the animals who live with them. Do you sometimes feel that way? Do you get into that mode with the felines?
Time.
Yeah.
All the time.
Tell us about that. I want to know about that. Tell us about how that.
Yeah, when we first started this, was learn about the characteristics of the species.
Okay.
And we learned the personality traits of each of the animals, and that's where it gets good.
Absolutely.
That's where it becomes unique and wonderful because every one of them are different.
Yeah.
And you learn how really smart they are and how their intelligence, and so much of it is that they're born with such innate intelligence that I think most humans don't use what we really have in our brains.
Yeah.
But even with my domestic cats, I mean, they understand me. They understand English.
Mm-hmm.
I wish I could understand all of their language. I sometimes can by just the different way the vocabulary comes out. And cats have a huge vocabulary. I think they have the domestic cat.
Yeah.
It has a bigger vocabulary than any other animal, I understand.
Really?
Yes.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
And when you talk about a vocabulary, are you talking about understanding what is spoken to them?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No, they understand each how they talk to each other.
Really? And, oh, you got to explain this, because I am so curious. When cats talk to each other in the language that you're talking about, what language is that? Because I would love to know. Is it purr? You know, a little thing.
Oh, there's all kinds of different sounds.
Yeah.
All kinds of different sounds, and I find it absolutely fascinating, and I know that they communicate with mental telepathy as well.
Wow.
Which is, I hope I'm not sounding like a wacko here. But
No.
I watch them so closely.
This is
and
natural.
And watch their looks to each other and the reactions without saying a word, without a sound coming out of them. I will give you one example.
Mm-hmm.
I have four cats.
Yeah.
And I named them after actors I had worked with. I have Rod Taylor,
yeah.
Sean Connery, Marlon Brando, John Saxon,
mm-hmm.
Melanie Griffith, and now I've got Johnny Depp,
wow.
who was found living under my house about a month and a half ago. But anyway, they get up on the bed with me when I go to bed. And Rod Taylor is a bully.
Oh.
And he'll get up on the bed, and he doesn't have to say a word. and little Marlon Brando will jump off and run.
Really?
Yeah, he looks at them. I mean, it's so obvious that he has just said, hit the road.
Yeah. You know? So cats have their own pecking order, so to speak, there.
Oh, yes, they do.
Now, do you ever find that you can actually communicate to your cats in cat language?
I haven't been able to do that.
Are there actually some people who can?
I believe there are.
Wow. Isn't that?
Yeah.
Because, you know, I love universal languages, and I think that all creatures, you know, human beings are creatures, and everything else is a creature. We should have some way to communicate. You know, just like, I'll put it this way, just like maybe a few hundred years ago, everybody was in their own little separate country, and we didn't know really what was going on country to country, and the only way that we did was through, you know, barbarous wars and you know, colonization and everything. Then the United States comes into being, and all of a sudden this melting pot concept comes in, and we understand each other a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
And the language becomes a little bit clearer, and we can communicate with people a little bit more. You know, that could be also something in the future of human beings communicating with animals a little bit more.
Oh, absolutely.
And at one time, we, you know, who knows in the future, 100, 200 years from now, maybe only 50 years from now, we might have a melting pot, not only of human beings, but a melting pot of a lot of God's creatures,
you know,
who are really communicating.
We understand a lot of what they're saying, and I think they understand more of what we're saying.
Yeah.
And understand our language, I think, quite clearly.
This is wonderful, Tippi. Got a few minutes left here. It's been wonderful talking to Tippi Hedren here. Not only a marvelous actress who performed just a stellar performance in The Birds, but also is a very caring and deep and loving woman. Go to www.shambhala.org and really help out the organization here. Help out the preserve where the animals are taken care of, exotic animals, in the way that is natural for them and loving for them. Do whatever you can, people, to contribute. Tippi has already had one bill passed that will help to also protect human beings and animals and in their natural habitats, both of them, the Captive Wildlife Safety Act. And there's another one that is pending in Congress right now, the Federal Ban on Breeding Exotic Cats for Personal Possession Act. What's holding it up, as Tippi said, is, you know, the circuses. And sometimes circuses, well, they're a lot of fun for the audience, but you know, they ain't a lot of fun for the animals, people. Let's get on board with that. Let's help Tippi out here.
And in that circus, there are people who want to be there.
Mm-hmm.
They want to, if they want to swing on those high, you know, flying trapezes.
Yeah.
But none of the animals have to be in the circus.
That's right.
None of them.
That's right. They don't have a choice.
No, they don't.
What are some of the hopes and even dreams of Tippi Hedren for the future for your exotic animals and for all humanity as well, I might add?
There's not one thing that we can give a wild animal in captivity that they need. And if you can understand that, I think everything could change. And it's cruel. It's just cruel to have them in a captive situation where they can't do their job.
Absolutely. I have to ditto that.
I hope that your audience will, our audience,
mm-hmm.
will contact their congressmen and their senators, write to the president about this issue. These animals, these exotic cats, are not pets. They are dangerous, and they have proven to be dangerous over and over again. And it's not a case of if an accident will happen, it's when it will happen.
Thank you very, very much, Tippi, for all of your marvelous reflections here. People of distinction, the very distinguished Tippi Hedren has been our special guest here. And as she said, our audience, we're all in this together. So help out the Shambhala Preserve www.shambhala.org. Thank you, Tippi. You've just been a marvelous addition to Cole and Noble, and I dearly appreciate this, and I'd love to have you back sometime in the near future as well.
I would love to do that, Al. Thank you for inviting me to talk today.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure.
Happy New Year.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for that, too. So that's the show, Tippi. I love it. I love doing this.
Well, you're very good at it.
Thank you, Tippi.
Extremely good at it.
I appreciate that.
It was great to talk to you, Al. Thank you so much.